Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. A change in guest topics and tactics in this final segment. Usually Oregon votes for governor in years when it does not vote for president. This year is different. John Kitzhaber's departure just a month into his term last year put Kate Brown in the chair and triggered a two-year election for governor this year. And yes, she's running. Kate Brown won election as Oregon Secretary of State in 2008 after more than a decade and a half in the Oregon legislature. She was Senate Majority Leader in her final 4 years in the Senate. Kate Brown, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Governor Brown.
Thank you. Just delighted to be here, and it's truly been an honor to serve as Oregon's governor.
You're the only candidate who can answer this. How does the job of governor compare with the ideas you had about it before taking office?
Well, I've been pleased that we've been able to move Oregon forward. I was so tickled to sign into law our new motor voter to move Oregon to a seamless system of voter registration. We've had over 50,000 Oregonians use that system to register to vote. I signed into law a minimum wage bill that will increase the minimum wage. Over 200,000 Oregonians will get an increase in July of this year. And very pleased to have Oregon be the first state in the nation to move away from coal-generated electricity. Pleased to sign that bill as well.
All right, I want to get to that list of accomplishments. I want to take a look, too, at the plan that you list on your website for the next 2 years. It's topped by a determination to change the way Salem works. What is wrong with the way it works now? And after all the time you've spent there, are you part of the problem?
Well, I actually think that state government can do better in terms of delivering services to Oregonians. I expect a level of excellence, and taxpayers expect that at one as well. And we are working hard to make sure that Oregonians get the services they expect and deserve.
All right. Item two on that list is improving Oregon's high school graduation rate, which is one of the five worst in the country. What would be the steps to get that accomplished?
Great. Just hired a education innovation officer who's sole focus is to improve Oregon's abysmally low high school graduation rate. It's true we need better outcomes from our schools. His work will involve a strategic plan replicating best practices. There are high schools around the state who have been able to increase their graduation rate. We want to make sure that those best practices are available to all of the high schools around the state, and that Oregon schools and school districts have the tools and the resources that they need to improve outcomes for our high school students. We want every high school student to graduate from high school with a plan for their future.
Governor Brown, help people understand how it is that schools can underperform like this and at the same time take in a lot of money, because one of the accomplishments you list is that school funding went up 9%.
Well, obviously, we're still just seeing the impacts of the significant resources that we invested. I will tell you, we spent $100 million in early childhood, including full-day kindergarten. We won't see the impacts of those investments for over a decade and a half. But I will tell you, over the last decade or two, our schools have been challenged with financial resources. We will have a time of good economics in Oregon, and we'll be able to invest significantly in schools. And then 2 years later, the economy will be tighter and we will need to reduce funding for schools. That has resulted in, frankly, one of the shortest school years in the country and very large class sizes. It makes it very challenging for teachers to teach and students to learn. We need to change that paradigm and make sure we're continuing to invest in our schools.
All right. Regardless of party or philosophy, whoever the next governor is, that person will have to deal with the issue of public retiree pension payments for the PERS system, taking a bigger bite out of the state budget in the next biennium. How, given particularly the court ruling that overturned some previous efforts in the legislature, how can the state deal with that?
Well, it is absolutely clear that the Oregon Supreme Court ruled in the Morrow decision that the legislation was not legally viable. For my part, I've asked my legal counsel to thoroughly review the statutes and consult with experts to see if there was a path forward for Oregon that would pass muster in the courts, as well as result in significant financial savings. To my knowledge, there is not that path forward. That being said, we are working with PERS actuaries, essentially turning over every rock and every stone to see what other options are available to us. There is no question in my mind that we need additional resources on the table for the next biennium, given the budget shortfall that we face. And if we want to continue to invest in a system of education that is seamless, literally from cradle to career, we will need additional resources on the table.
Additional resources meaning additional revenue for the state?
Yes, yes.
Through what pathway? I mean, I certainly hear from the Republican side the accusations that the Democrats are all behind Initiative Petition 28, which is the gross receipts tax. It is not qualified for the ballot yet, but do you support it?
I have not taken a position on IP 28 yet. It's early. We are reviewing the measure to determine whether it meets my criteria. That is, does it put additional revenue on the table? Does it ensure that out-of-state corporations pay their fair share? And does it unduly burden Oregon's working families? And how does it impact Oregon's homegrown businesses? And that's the analysis we're undertaking right now, is the impact on Oregon businesses throughout the state.
There's discussion of the fact that a gross receipts tax would just get passed on to consumers as an undeclared sales tax. Do you see it that way?
Well, as I said, we're still analyzing the impacts of IP 28.
Governor, I want to come back. Governor Kate Brown is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm sorry because we had to pre-record this segment. We can't take any phone calls or emails for Governor Brown. Can PERS, the Public Employee Retirement System, continue as a defined benefit plan, or does it at some point have to be turned into a defined contribution plan like a 401k?
It's my understanding we now have three tiers in PERS, and we've already moved in that direction.
Let's talk about environmental moves. Opponents of the Clean Fuels Standard and the No Coal Power Law, they may not be in the majority, but they're certainly forceful in their arguments. How do you address the concern that fuel taxes will rise with the Clean Fuel Standard and with the No Coal Power Law, that electric ratepayers will bear the brunt of the switch from coal for power?
Well, to be perfectly clear, new coal to clean does continue the same cap that we have in Oregon law. If the costs increase more than 4%, it essentially opens the door for alternative strategies. But the analysis of the legislation shows that we anticipate a 1 to 1.5% increase, which is well under the cap. And I have to tell you, this legislation is groundbreaking. We are moving to 50% renewables by 2040, which will help grow our economy. It will grow greener, cleaner jobs throughout the state of Oregon. And we are moving away from coal-powered electricity. I think that is the direction that we need to be moving in. And under my leadership, Oregon will continue to adopt policies that will reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. The biggest challenge we are facing in this state, in this country, and in this world is changing global climate. And for deniers to say these are not the right policies, great, let's see other alternative policies. But there is absolutely no question, Jeff, that these policies move Oregon in the right direction. While Oregon is a small part of the problem globally, we can be a huge part of the solution nationally, and that's exactly what we're doing, and I am so proud of Oregon.
Any tweaks you said? You mentioned the coal to clean, the more than 4%. I didn't quite understand that mechanism there.
If the increase is more than 4%, it essentially allows us to go back to other types of energy.
All right. Let's talk about the minimum wage that you touted just a bit, that there was a minimum wage increase passed, takes effect July 1st of this year. Some business owners, including some from Southern Oregon who have met, were in tears at the Capitol over the passage of the minimum wage bill, worried about their ability to pay the higher wages. How did you arrive at your support specifically of what the legislature passed, which is the geographically zoned minimum wage increase?
Well, I think the most important thing we can do is put money in the pockets of working Oregonians and help Oregon families move out of poverty. There are over 90,000 households in this state headed by single women raising one or two children, living at the edge of poverty. I believe that policies like increasing the minimum wage will help these families. 200,000 Oregonians will see an increase in July of this year. And we did it in a way that will allow businesses to plan and prepare for the increase. And I think that was better than the alternative, which was a ballot measure in January of 2017, starting at $13.50. So those give businesses throughout the state. And my argument will be is that more money in the pockets of Oregonians means that that money is going to be spent hopefully on local businesses throughout the entire state of Oregon.
Kate Brown is the governor of Oregon and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, running in the primary, and we'll know the results tomorrow night. Governor Brown, on the minimum wage, how do you justify the law to a person who, for example, makes less just by driving over the line from Lane County to Douglas County?
Well, I think it's really important that the minimum wage, the proposal that we passed, reflect the different economic regions and the different cost of living of Oregon, and that's exactly what we did.
All right, let's talk about other ways in which Oregon can get its economy goosed up a little bit. How can the state be of more assistance to new businesses getting off the ground?
That's a really great question. Small businesses comprise the vast majority of Oregon businesses. Over 90% of Oregon businesses are small businesses, and they employ over 50% of the Oregon population. I have created a small business advisory cabinet, and we are working hard at ideas to increase access to capital for entrepreneurs and small businesses, as well as provide a higher level of technical expertise and, frankly, to take a look at regulatory reform that the state can do to ensure that these small businesses can grow and thrive in every single corner of the state. I think that's one area. The other area is that we can continue to invest in infrastructure, making sure we have safe and efficient roads so that workers can get to their jobs safely, but also ensuring that producers can get their goods to market in a cost-effective and efficient manner. So I'm committed to making sure that Oregon moves forward on a transportation package in a way that makes sense for our businesses and for Oregonians this next legislative session. The other areas that we can continue to invest in innovation, I'll just share a couple of ideas, concepts. We invested in UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicle technology, to ensure that communities like Pendleton and Warm Springs and Tillamook get in on this technology at the very early stages. And we invested in CLTs, cross-laminated timber. I like to describe this as plywood on steroids that will, Oregon has the first CLT manufacturing plant in the entire United States in Douglas County. And this will put people back to work in rural, timber-dependent communities, create jobs, hopefully create healthier forests, and grow a product that will be able to develop into a sustainable building. And I think that's the kind of win-win-win we are trying to create. Lastly, I think it's critically important that we partner with the business community and the education system to ensure that we create a skilled, diverse workforce. And for me, that means investing, doubling, increasing our investments in career and technical ed and STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. What I used to call vo-tech education, vo-technical education, it's hands-on learning experiences that awaken children to the power of their potential, but give them a clear sense of connecting the classroom to their career in a way that helps them do better in basic skills like math and reading.
Governor, about 30 seconds left. You talk about wanting to make state colleges and universities more affordable. What steps can be taken there?
We did a couple of really great things with the help of folks like Senator Alan Bates and Representative Peter Buckley. We invested in expanding the Oregon Opportunity Grant. We added 16,000 students that could access this assistance. We also created the Oregon Promise so that Oregon high school students who get a good grade point average can go to Oregon's community colleges for a mere $50 a semester. That's a great deal, and it opens the doors of opportunity to many Oregon students.
All right, Governor Kate Brown, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Very much appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.